All right, starting out a little early this morning. This morning, we're going to go ahead and pick up with our study of Acts again. So I've been assigned the next two Sunday mornings to cover Acts 12. So before we dive into Acts 12, I wanted to very briefly give a 30,000-foot view, overview of what we've been discussing leading into Acts 12. So looking in Acts 1, chapter 1 through 7, the gospel is spread and the church is established, tested, purified, and strengthened in Jerusalem. In Acts chapter 8 to 12, we see that the gospel spreads to Judea and Samaria and to the Gentiles, multiplying and gathering speed, changing lives, and breaking traditions. We see that the church of Antioch is established, and we see the continuation of the power of the Holy Spirit carrying the good news of Christ across the world. So as we start looking at Acts 12, my focus this morning is going to be on Acts 12, 1 through 17. So if your Bibles are open to Acts 12, I wanted to start off this morning by reading those verses. Acts 12, 1 through 17. It was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to the death with the sword. When he saw that this met with approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of the unleavened bread. After arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover. So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. The night before Herod was to be brought to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance. Suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared, and light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him. "Quick, get up," he said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrists. Then the angel said to him, "Put on your clothes and your sandals." And Peter did so. "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me," the angel told him. Peter followed him out of prison, but he had no idea what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. They passed the first and the second guards and came into the iron gate leading into the city. It opened for them by itself, and they went through it. When they had walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter came to himself and said, "Now I know without a doubt that the Lord had sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were hoping would happen." When this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. Peter knocked at the outer entrance, and a servant named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed that she ran back without opening it and exclaimed, "Peter is at the door." "You're out of your mind," they told her. When she kept insisting that it was so, they said it must be his angel. But Peter kept on knocking, and when they had opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Peter motioned with his hand for them to be quiet and described how the Lord had brought him out of prison. "Tell James and the other brothers and sisters about this," he said, and he left for another place. So even though we just read through all of the different verses of Acts 12, 1 through 17, I'm going to go ahead and reread each of the verses as I touch on each of those different subjects here. So rereading Acts 12, verse 1, it was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. Verse 1 opens up with, "It was about this time." So Acts 12 is not necessarily following in chronological order with Acts 11, but it's likely occurring at a similar time that Barnabas is leaving Antioch, heading to Tarsus to look for Saul, and as Barnabas and Saul are going down into Jerusalem. Acts 12, verses 1 to 19, likely would have occurred around 43 AD, since King Herod, referenced here in verse 1, was likely Herod Agrippa I. Herod Agrippa I was born around 10 or 11 BC and died in 44 AD. See verse 23 here in Acts 12. So that would have fallen in line with this passage precisely. We also see in Acts 11 and 28 that a great famine had spread across the Roman Empire during the reign of Claudius, which would have likely occurred around 46 to 48 AD. So that would have been a few years after the death of Herod Agrippa I. Herod Agrippa I was the grandson of Herod the Great, who we remember for calling on the killing of all of the boys in Bethlehem in order to kill Jesus when he was born. Herod the Great also killed Herod Agrippa I's father as well. Herod Agrippa I had a spotty history. He was constantly in trouble with the Roman officials until 37 AD, when Roman Emperor Caligula made Herod Agrippa I king over northern Palestine and various territories previously held by Philip the Tetrarch. Those territories are actually listed in Luke 3 and 1. However, later in 41 AD, Claudius, a childhood friend of Herod Agrippa I, expanded Herod Agrippa I's reign to include areas such as Samaria and Judea. This would actually expand Herod's kingdom to the extent that everything his grandfather Herod the Great had ruled over, he had now ruled over as well. Herod Agrippa I was also the nephew of Herod Antipas, who, if you remember, beheaded John the Baptist in Matthew 14, 3 through 12. And he also put Jesus on trial in Luke 23, 8 through 12. So, now that we understand who Herod the king was, as referenced in verse 1 here, and his family's history, it's not very surprising to see that Herod Agrippa I continues to persecute the church. In verse 1, we see that he arrests some of the brethren of the church to persecute them. Following that, in verse 2, it reads that he had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. We see that James, the brother of John, was put to the death by sword by Herod Agrippa I's command. James here is mentioned twice in Acts 12, here in verse 2, and then later in verse 17. However, to be clear, the Acts 12 is talking about two different Jameses. Verse 17 is talking about James, the brother of Jesus, whereas in verse 2, it's talking about James, the brother of John, that later lost his life. Interestingly enough, James, the brother of Jesus, is the only James that will be referenced in the New Testament after these verses. We see that he is assigned as an elder of the church in Jerusalem in Galatians 1 and 19. However, back to verse 2. James, the brother of John, is mentioned many times in the Gospels before this, and he's seemingly always referenced along with his brother John. These brothers, the sons of Zebedee, were the two in Matthew 4 and 21 that were out on the boat with their father, preparing their nets, when Jesus called to them, and then when they hear Jesus, they immediately left their boats and followed him. James and his brother John would have also likely known Simon Peter and Andrew, who were called to follow Jesus just before James and John. These four apostles, along with Zebedee their father, likely would have worked together extensively in the past since they all fished in the same area and might have even worked together prior. James was one of the apostles that we were able to witness most of what most of the other apostles were unable to see. So just as a couple of examples here, in Mark 5 and 37, Peter, James, and John were able to witness Jesus raising a little girl from the dead. And in Mark 9 and 2, Peter, James, and John were the only ones able to witness Jesus' transfiguration on the mountain. So along with Peter, who we'll be talking about with the most of rest of Acts 12, James was among the innermost of Jesus, with Jesus. The apostles, at this point, had already suffered a lot of persecution. But until this moment, God had always intervened. They've suffered much, but outside this point, Judas had been the only one that had killed himself. James was the first of the apostles to be killed. This would have likely been a massive blow to the church and to the other teachers and to the other apostles. Looking at Acts 12 and 3, we read, "When he saw that this met with approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of the unleavened bread." Herod saw that James's death was met with approval by the Jews. So what did he do? He went and seized Peter as well. As a king, Herod Agrippa I was looking to find favor with those that he was ruling over, especially since he was ruling under Roman control. Despite the fact that it's fairly well established that Herod Agrippa I isn't a great guy, historically the Jewish rabbis wrote well of him. They were very fond of him and of his ruling. In fact, Herod was actually a descendant of Esau. Josephus, a known historian of the time, wrote that Herod Antipas was a direct descendant of Esau. And as we just discussed a few minutes ago, Herod Antipas was actually an uncle to Herod Agrippa I. However, despite his heritage outside of Jerusalem, Herod Agrippa acted like any other Roman of his time, dropping the act in front of the Jewish people. But when he was in Jerusalem, he adhered to the Jewish law to find favor in the eyes of the Jewish people. As a political stance, he wanted the Jews to find, as a political stance, he wanted the Jews to like him and that he wanted to keep the peace. On the other side, Christians stirred up trouble amongst everyone there. They were against the Jews. They were objects of violence due to their conflicting beliefs with the Jews. Therefore, Herod focused on persecuting the Christians to find favor in the eyes of the Jews so that he could continue to rule over them. We also see in verse 3 that this occurred during the festival of the unleavened bread, in other words, during the Passover. If we remember, Jesus was also arrested during the Passover many years ago at this point. So with James being killed, with the reminder of anniversary of Jesus' death, and with Peter being arrested at this time, it would have been especially hard for the church and a painful reminder for all the other apostles. So before we jump into Acts chapter 12, verse 4, I'm going to pause for a moment, see if there are any questions or comments.
Sorry, I guess that makes me the microphone guy as well, as Randy just pointed out. Two thoughts real quick, Britt. I did appreciate you mentioning that Herod acted like the Jews. In verse 2, it said he was killed with the sword. In verse 3, said it pleased the Jews. I saw that according to the Jewish tradition, beheading someone was reserved for people that were, quote, drew others away to strange worship. So by him killing James this way, reiterating for the Jews that Christianity was wrong. And so they would have been very glad to see that happen. And then the other thing I thought of is just that there's no mention that James is replaced. So, you know, you mentioned he's the first one killed, which would have been a blow, but there's no continuation. So Judas had been replaced, but the 12 are the 12. We don't have any continuation, which means there's no people with special privileges or powers or anything like that.
Yeah, remember from Acts 2, Matthias is replacing Judas, but at this time we don't have any replacement for James and for the other apostles that later die. Thank you for that. Any other comments or questions? All right. Looking at Acts 12 and 4, we read, "After arresting him, he put him in prison," talking about Peter here, "handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover." So we see that Herod Agrippa I kept Peter in prison throughout the remainder of the festival of the unleavened bread, and he planned to bring him out to show him to the crowds and to likely kill him, similarly to how he killed James. Peter had 16 guards total guarding him, keeping watch over him, throughout the night to ensure that he didn't try to escape. These guards would have worked in shifts, four at a time, It appears that from verse 6 that the two were chained to Peter and two were outside the cell at all times. I would guess that Herod would not waste 16 of his men just from anybody off the street. I would think that Herod putting 16 men in charge of watching Peter underlines how important of a figure that Peter would have been in the public eye, especially as a Christian. And this wouldn't have been the first time that worldly leaders would try to prevent the works of God from happening by using chains, guards, or even sealing the door of Jesus' tomb. Acts 12 and 5. So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. So we know at this point that Peter is sitting in prison, waiting for his public trial and his likely execution. But the key point in verse 5 for me is that the church was earnestly praying to God. They didn't just sit on their hands, worrying about themselves and the likely persecution that they would face, or write Peter off, but instead they prayed. The severity of the events that they were facing at this moment, James is killed, Peter is arrested, and being reminded of Jesus' death and his arrest, the church, instead of giving up hope, they did exactly what they should. They prayed. They prayed to God because they knew the situation was out of their hands. It should be the same today. When a situation is out of our hands, we ought to pray instead of worry. Prayer gave the church then, and us now, a hope for change. Prayer can bring around change when we're powerless. We see that the church's prayers were answered here and in the coming verses as well. We're not sure why God allowed James to be killed, but rescued Peter from the jail. But we're not supposed to understand what God's decisions are. We just need to trust in God that what he does is right. And through our prayers, ask that his will is done by our actions, just as Peter's freedom was the completion of God's will in these verses here. Acts 12 and 6 reads, "The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance." So again, as we discussed a moment ago, at this point, several days had passed, and Peter was in prison. He was put in prison during the Passover, and stays in prison at least a minimum until after the festival is over. We don't know which day or night that he was arrested, but we know that the festival of unleavened bread lasts at least 7 days, and Herod wanted to leave him in prison until after it was over. So as we discussed in verse 4, Herod is planning to bring Peter to trial in a few days. And in verse 6, it is night before that trial. Just as we're reminded that Peter was in prison for multiple days, we know that from verse 12, the church was continually praying during this time as well. They didn't just say one prayer before dinner and ask for Peter to be saved from Herod, but they were fervently asking God to care for him and to save him. We also read that Peter was very heavily guarded, just as he was earlier in verse 4. Herod Agrippa I wanted to ensure that Peter remained in that prison cell. We remember from Acts chapter 5 that after the Sadducees were furious with Peter and that the others that he was with, they had them arrested and thrown in prison. So Herod was trying his best because Peter had already escaped from prison once before. The angel of the Lord in Acts chapter 5 had come to them as well, opened the gates, and encouraged Peter and the other apostles to continue spreading the gospel. So Herod was making sure that Peter didn't escape this time. He didn't want to wake up in the morning with the embarrassment of losing a prisoner like had happened earlier in Acts chapter 5. However, as we're about to read, that's exactly what's going to happen. Reading Acts 12 and 7, "Suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him up. 'Quick, get up,' he said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrists." This isn't the first instance of the angel of the Lord appearing in the book of Acts. As we just discussed in Acts 5, the apostles are released from prison from the Sadducees by an angel of the Lord. And again, later in Acts 8, Philip is actually guided by an angel of the Lord to go south from Jerusalem when he then meets the Ethiopian on the road. However, in both of those accounts, other than describing them as angels of the Lord, they could have just looked like normal men. What stands out in Acts 12, verse 7 here, is that the angel of the Lord is shining to the point of light reflecting on the wall of the jail. This isn't just one of the other apostles sneaking in to break Peter free. The angel of the Lord is shining in this verse. The angel of the Lord wakes Peter up without waking up the guards attached to Peter, and his chains are broken free. Looking at Acts 12, 8 and 9, then the angel said to him, "Put on your clothes and your sandals." And Peter did so. "Wrap up your cloak around you and follow me," the angel told him. Peter followed him out of prison, but he had no idea what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. One very interesting parallel to Acts 12, verse 8, when the angel of the Lord tells Peter to dress himself and to follow him, is if we look back at John 21, 18 and 19. When Jesus is talking to Peter, he says, "Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and will lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate to the death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." So here there is an echo of Jesus' words when the angel tells Peter to dress himself and to follow him. At this time, Peter is still able to dress himself. He follows the angel of the Lord and goes where he wants to go. So as Jesus predicted, it wasn't yet his time to die, since he was able to dress himself and follow the angel that was sent to save him. As Peter is being led out of prison, he doesn't really know if what he's experiencing is reality or if it's a vision. We know earlier in Acts chapter 10 that Peter had fallen into a trance when he had seen a vision about clean and unclean animals. So at that time, the vision that he saw in Acts chapter 10 must have been very real for him if he were to question if this was in reality, was real, or another vision. We also know, since Peter was in prison for multiple days, we're really not sure how he was treated during this multiple-day stay. Did he have much water or food to eat or drink? Did he sleep much? These are all things that might have played into why Peter might not have trusted if he was just dreaming or experiencing reality. Acts chapter 12 and verse 10. They passed the first and the second guards and came to the iron gate leading into the city. It opened for them by itself. And when they went through it, when they had walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left him. So similar to the angel shining in prison, we see another event that indicates to us that this angel of the Lord is not just any ordinary man. The gates of the city opened up for Peter and the angel automatically. I could be wrong, but I don't think in this time period there were any sensors or wheelchair accessible buttons invented by 43 AD. So this indicates to us that something happened that was outside of Peter or man's control was involved here. Once they made it fully out of the prison and into the streets, the angel left Peter. So I have to assume here that it was the angel of the Lord's role to get Peter out of prison safely, and once that was completed, he left. Acts chapter 12 and verse 11 says, "Then Peter came to himself and said, 'Now I know without a doubt that the Lord had sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were hoping would happen.'" So in verse 9, Peter doubts or is unsure if what he's experiencing is reality or another vision. But here in verse 11, we read that Peter snaps to and understands that he's free from prison, and that through the Lord's power, he was able to be released from that prison. He also understands that Herod Agrippa I is the one that put him in that prison, and that the Jewish people were wanting him there. And again, we also see that it says that the Jewish people were hoping what would happen. So again, referencing James and the fact that the Jewish people were hoping that he'd be killed just as James was. I also find it interesting here that Peter says that he has no doubt that the Lord, through the angel, rescued him. Whatever clouded the mind of Peter as the angel were leading him out of the prison, we know that it's gone now, and that Peter understood exactly what had just happened to him. So again, before we read through the rest of Acts, starting in verse 12, I want to take a quick break, see if there's any comments or questions here.
Said they were praying without ceasing. And over in Thessalonians, it tells us to pray without ceasing. I think too often we give up on prayer too quick if we don't get the answer we expect. And when we do get the answer, we'll find out here a little later, those people got the answer they expected and they still wasn't sure it was. So power in prayer.
Yeah, there's a lot of times in the Bible that it reminds us that we need to pray without ceasing, and you know, I know in my own life it's you forget that, so you need to read the Bible and remember that you need to continually pray. Thank you, Dave.
Along the thought of prayer, back in Matthew the 18th chapter. Jesus was talking to his disciples. And I think about the 18th, 19th verse of that chapter. It talks about if two of them would ask anything of the Father in agreement, that the Father would give it to them. If they agree on anything, it would be given to them. So the power of prayer, of asking, that's something God expects us to do. That's what he's telling his disciples to do. That's what we are. We're God's disciples. So we need to think about that. Another thought come to me as George was speaking, praying without ceasing. Is that they're just continually praying one right after another, or just occasionally when we're praying, asking for the same thing?
Yeah, I think it could be either way. I know, as we're about to get to, the church is in the house of Mary for multiple days, and I think, you know, they're probably in the mindset at least to continually be thinking of Peter and to be praying for him. So I think that's probably what it means there. Thank you for those comments. Any others here?
It reminds me, I believe it's 2 Samuel 17, 12, somewhere in there, where David prays constantly, you know, his son's sick, and he prays through the night, etc. It's that same earnest prayer. It's that constant pleading.
Yeah, and I guess thinking off of the top here, like Psalms, most of Psalms were some type of prayer, and that's almost a continually praying. If all the Psalms you read through, that's a list of David's prayers. Thank you for that. Any others here? All right. Looking into Acts chapter 12 and verse 12. When this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. So after being released from prison, Peter goes to a familiar place, somewhere that he'd likely been many times before. So I imagine this is not too dissimilar from what we experience today in the modern church. Mary had likely opened her house up for fellowship with other brothers and sisters many times. And at this time, it was specifically for prayer. As we brought up earlier, there are many people gathered together in a house praying and hoping for the release of Peter. Mary very likely had been hosting this group of individuals for many days, and they had been praying. Mary may have very well been a widow, since Luke doesn't reference a husband here. We also might speculate that Mary could have been pretty wealthy to have a house in Jerusalem and to have a full-time servant, Rhoda, who we'll be introduced to in the next verse. As we discussed earlier with James, Mary is also another very common name, so Luke notes that Mary is the mother of John, also known as Mark. We also know that Mary would have also been an aunt to Barnabas, according to Colossians 4 and 10, when it says that Mark was a cousin to Barnabas. So this is the same Mark that wrote the second gospel in the latter part of Acts 12. And in the latter part of Acts 12, he starts his mission along with Barnabas and Saul. So looking at Acts 12, 13, and 14. Peter knocked at the outer entrance, and a servant named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed that she ran back without opening it and exclaims, "Peter is at the door." We learn from this passage that Peter arrives at Mary's gate and finds it locked and has to knock to enter. I would assume that this time that Christians were very likely taking extra cautions due to the events happening around them. James had just been killed, and Peter, at least to their knowledge, was actively still in prison. Rhoda comes to answer the knock. Rhoda here is described as a hired servant by the family of Mary. However, we see that she's either actively a Christian as well, or at least emotionally involved to the point that she's overjoyed by the recognition of Peter's voice. So much so that she runs and tells the others without letting Peter in. Acts 12, 15 through 16. "You're out of your mind," they told her. But when she kept insisting that it was so, they said it must be his angel. But Peter kept on knocking, and when they opened the door, they saw him and were astonished. When the others hear Rhoda, they don't believe that it's really Peter outside waiting to be let in. None of them had planned or taken part of any type of escape plan for Peter, so why would they expect him to be free? At this point, they didn't expect an angel of the Lord to intervene and to let Peter out. In the same way that we see other accounts of the Bible of people of having miraculous events playing out, some people didn't believe. Even those who had faith and followed Jesus were sometimes unable to believe in the extraordinary. We remember that Jesus was walking on water, and he was going out onto the water to meet the apostles in boats, and they exclaimed that he was a ghost. Even as Jesus was standing in front of Thomas, when Jesus had spent 3 days in the grave, and he had now risen from the dead, even after Jesus had told him that's exactly what was going to happen, Thomas still didn't believe. I expect that we might be the same today. We tend to focus on our normal lives and don't expect any miraculous events to occur. I think another factor in their disbelief could have been the fact that the word of women at this time was largely discounted. So Rhoda, a servant, and a young woman would have likely been held in even lower esteem, and therefore some might have not believed her at all. So the people in Mary's house didn't believe, but finally they still went to the gate anyway. When the door was opened, they see Peter standing there, and they're all shocked. Their prayers are answered, and by a miraculous event, Peter is there once again. After reading through these verses many different times, I believe that Luke is humorously describing this event. Peter is stuck in prison, and when he's released, he's stuck waiting outside of a gate for some time because Rhoda is so excited that Peter's released that she forgets to let him in. And when the others don't come to the door immediately, it's because they don't believe her. Acts 12 and 17. Peter motioned with his hand for them to be quiet and described how the Lord had brought him out of prison. "Tell James and the other brothers and sisters about this," he said, and then he left for another place. We see that Peter motions with his hand and quiets the group. I'm sure the shock and the excitement of seeing Peter caused everyone to start talking over one another. Once the group is quiet, he then works to try and describe the events that had just taken place. Peter then tells them to pass along the word that Peter is free from jail, and to tell James, the brother of Jesus, soon to be one of the leaders of the Church of Jerusalem, and all the other brothers and sisters as well. After Peter tells him his story and makes sure all the other people in the church are aware of his freedom, he needs to find a place of refuge. So that's why it says he then left for another place. As we'll read next week, Herod and the guards don't just forget about Peter and the fact that he vanished from his prison cell. If he were to stay in town, he would be recaptured and likely put to death. So I'll go ahead and pause one last time here as we're getting close to a close. Are there any other comments or questions or anything through the last 17 verses? Yeah, Nick, behind you.
One thing that kind of strikes me in parallel with Rick's lessons over the last month on Wednesday nights is Peter didn't try and escape prison on his own. None of the brethren seemed to have tried to help him escape. And we've got a number of examples of that in Acts, where when they escape prison, it's because God sends someone to let them out, or in a couple other cases, their jailers are convinced to let them out. So Peter seems to have accepted whatever God has in store for him here. And I think that's, it just parallels Rick's lesson really well.
Yeah. Yeah, I know there's multiple accounts in the New Testament about the apostles being in prison, and they sing songs of hymns. They're not worried about trying to get away from the guards, but they're just waiting on God to let them out, or if not, then that's their path. Appreciate that. Yep, Jerry.
I think it's also kind of interesting. We're really not told what they prayed.
Yeah.
After James is already killed, I don't know. They might be praying, well, would you please spare Peter's life? I don't really know. We're not told what they prayed. We are told that they're surprised when he's there. So I don't know if they were just praying for boldness for themselves or to help keep us strong, and there's no mention of the apostles going out and trying to raise James from the dead or John the Baptist, because that wasn't what it was for. Because otherwise everybody would become a Christian, because you could always go to and get brought back to life. So that none of that goes on. And as Nick points out, they didn't try to go break him out of prison or anything. It's just they prayed, and God answered the prayer in his own way. And even Peter was astonished that it all happened. And it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'd have to imagine during this time period, they're likely praying for Peter. And I would have to imagine with the churches just now being established, they're likely praying for the church. You know, what's going to happen if one of their key figures, Peter, are killed. So I think that's the big thing there.
One of the things, I don't know if it's a good strategy or what, that Peter was thinking through, or providence of God, but when he went to Mary's home, you notice that he reported in, and then he left. I think this is an indication that maybe the governmental people there may have known that Mary was a Christian, that it might be a likely place for Peter to be. And if he had been there, caught in her house, it might have brought repercussions down to even to Mary and her family of people there and the other Christians that might have been there. So he left and went someplace else. It's something that you think about, someone who is escaping, if you would call it that, carrying out his end of the bargain too.
Yeah. Well, we know all the Herods of the Bible weren't shy with their persecution of the church, so I'm sure that would have not ended well if you were found. Any others here? All right. I appreciate all those comments. As we're kind of coming to a close here, with the few minutes that we have remaining, what we learn from Acts 12, 1 through 17, is that we have assurance from God that God listens when we pray. He might not respond in the way that we expect him to, or in the time in the time that we hope or that we expect. But regardless, we know that God works in the way through the lives of his believers. God's will was completed through James in a way that would have been satisfactory to God and to James. God worked differently through Peter to fulfill a different goal. But as we discussed earlier, Peter had already been assured that he would die for the glory of God. It just wasn't his time right then. God had his hand in all the events that were taking place in Acts 12 in the same way that he does today. The importance is that we pray and that we have faith in God, that we're satisfied with the completion of God's will, just as James was and just as Peter was when it was his time to leave this world. Finally, remember through the example of the church in these passages. They came together in prayer in tough times, trusting God when all felt it was lost. They had just lost one of the leaders of their church, James, and they were at risk of losing another, Peter. Despite that, they met in the home of Mary and prayed for days, asking God for hope. I want to briefly read Acts chapter 12, 18 through the end here before we close. So if you're still in Acts chapter 12, starting in verse 18, in the morning, there was no small commotion among the soldiers as to what had become of Peter. After Herod had a thorough search made for him and did not find him, he cross-examined the guards and ordered that they be executed. Then Herod went from Judea to Caesarea and stayed there. He had been quarreling with his people of Tyre and Sidon, and they now joined together and sought an audience with him. After securing the support of Blastius, a trusted personal servant of the king, they asked for peace because they depended on the king's country for their food supply. On the appointed day, Herod, wearing his royal robes, sat on his throne and delivered a public address to the people. They shouted, "This is the voice of a god, not a man." Immediately, because Herod did not give praise to God, an angel of the Lord struck him down, and he was eaten by worms and died. But the word of God continued to spread and flourish. So next week, we'll be looking at Acts chapter 12, 18 through 25. Well, we'll see the aftermath of Peter's release from prison and how Herod's blasphemy affects him. Thank you very much.